and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12. The phone number toll free from anywhere. Big show. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. We have Representative Robert Andrews of the great state of New Jersey coming up. Paul Katami, one of the plaintiffs in the Prop 8 case. That's right. We had one yesterday. We have one today. And, of course, it's Wednesday.
Steffi.
Yeah, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
The Hump Day.
Days with Hal Sparks.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Take me. Oh, happy clappy man.
Hiya.
Hello, Hal Sparks.
Sorry.
Good morning.
Hi. Notice the lack of panic in my voice.
I know it. Well, already I am torn between two lovers. My future husband, Keith Olbermann, of course, going off on the president last night. Mm-hmm. My main hoa, Randy Rhodes, in full support of my president. I'm torn between two lovers.
Could you not?
We are just,
I felt like I've died and gone to Love American Style.
We are split. But Hal Sparks, of course, my soulmate, my one and only, my
yes.
always and forever.
Thank
you complete me.
Today.
You had me at hello.
Today.
What do
I
you think?
I beg your pardon. Once a week, at least.
What do you think? I live for Wednesdays.
Okay, as do I. Mm. A couple things. It's hard to know where to start because there's been so much kind of back and forth, mostly forth,
yes.
With people about this. And first of all, let's call this what it is. It's stimulus part two. The thing they said Obama could not get through.
I guess I'm in the compromise camp because I'm a Libra. Because every
me too.
When Randy talks, I'm like yes, yes. And
yeah.
then some of the things Keith said, I'm like yes, but okay.
No. I get that. I'm not a big fan of the tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires.
No, it makes me crazy.
Yeah, sure. It's a 2-year extension of that particular tax cut. With it. We got the biggest thing, and the thing that Obama was really fighting for the most was this 13-month extension of unemployment benefits, because it has it is the single strongest stimulative effect on the economy that they can actually do right now, that they can actually have.
You and I talked about last night. You know, Keith, Rachel, Ed, obviously a solid block of opposition to this.
Sure.
However, Lawrence O'Donnell. Who, you know, he's the only guy that has been in the room trying to get this stuff done. He is, of course, much more measured about
exactly.
this.
Exactly.
And I mean, even some of our favorite bloggers, I'll read stuff today from Andrew Sullivan in full support of it. Rude Pundit, not. You know,
right.
I mean, get some. I mean, and I get the points on both sides. But look, you know, the one thing the president said is really true. This is a hostage situation.
It is.
This is what I said yesterday. They were not bluffing about unemployment benefits.
Nope.
They do not give a about anybody.
They
blocked the top 2%.
In the last 2 weeks, they have blocked extension of unemployment benefits, and that bill only extended it for 3 months.
Till
February.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, and Lawrence O'Donnell
and
said the same thing that you and I have been saying. It this would only get worse in January.
Right. And
the poor are going to pay in the meantime, the middle class.
And they just blocked a bill put through that would extend the Bush tax cuts for just the middle class and up to millionaires, up to people who make $1 million. They blocked that in entirety. So the idea that you can somehow just say, we're going to make a principled stand on the backs of people who are facing a job market that is still almost unsurmountable in certain parts of the country, and make your principles stand on the backs of, okay, we don't want to extend the middle class tax cuts if it means the rich people get it. It's
I think what we're torn between, Hal, is I, and you know me, you and I, happy clappy liberals, I don't hate anybody, but yesterday I hate these Republicans
absolutely.
In power right now. I mean, and I'm not talking about my family, my Republican brother,
nope.
who I love, who I joke about. I'm talking about these particular Republicans in power.
Right.
That if you don't have moral outrage over what they just did, to the poor and the middle class in this, how they took those people hostage to get tax breaks for the top 2% who do not need them. I you know what, Chris, I told you yesterday, I never respond to my brother. I don't get drawn into these.
I know.
And I didn't respond yesterday.
Okay, good.
Well, I know what Dad would have thought of the tax breaks because I talked to him about it, about when Reagan passed them, how stimulative they are. And I'm like, my dad died in 1983. Mm-hmm. Any major economist would tell you trickle-down economics didn't work.
Right.
So
it
my dad might have thought that in 1981 or 82 when Reagan, you know what I mean? But you're going, all of these Nobel-winning economists just wrote a letter to the White House and to Congress saying, I mean, David Stockman, Reagan's budget director.
Right.
Has just said, you know, basically the same things you and I are all saying.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
of us are saying. So, and I'm like, you can't. No, trickle down did not work.
Mm-mm. And by the way, if you're Republican or you're a Tea Party supporter right now, what is your party making it stand on? What can you say is your single
legislative deficit, big government, and the fact that what is hard to swallow is $900 billion we're adding to the deficit for something that is not going to help. Anything.
Now, granted, that's over $900 billion, that's over 10 years. The two-year effect of extending it will be significantly less than that, which is why Obama fought to make it temporary.
Yeah.
It's not a permanent extension, which is the thing that they were holding out for. But his card that he played was, I'll just let them all die, I'll start my own process like everybody's telling me to do, and they went, no, we'll make it just 2 years temporary, because they think they can win this around the presidential election in 2012. But the benefit of allowing...
Well, I mean, and it is amazing. Andrew Solomon thinks this was the most brilliant thing ever. And, of course, you know, obviously there's a lot of liberals that thinks it's the biggest cave-in ever, the biggest...
Right.
Let me read, because thank you for all your letters, by the way, especially the ones, I hate you, you die, please.
Right, sure.
You stupid
die,
apologist.
Bitch.
Hate. For some reason, I'm responsible for the tax cut compromise, as I am for us losing the public option. I somehow responsible for everything.
Everybody, but for the record, by the way,
and the
I
people
am.
Apparently have tuned me off, except that they get writing to tell me how stupid I still am.
Yeah.
So they're sneaking a listen every now and again just to tell me that I am a stupid whore. And I appreciate that, and thank you. Please and thank you. So it goes without saying, I don't need to read all those.
Actually,
there's
no such thing as a stupid whore, because at the very least, whores make money doing things that other people give away for free.
Thank you. Okay. Bob writes, my president is a wimp. Subject line, the Republicans are bullies and the president is a wimp. If you appease the bully now, it will only get worse when the bully is more powerful in January.
Oh, God.
This president does not understand the bully pulpit he's been given. State your position, then use the pulpit, use the press, use primetime TV to get your position out to the public. Let them bring government to a halt. As long as you let the people know why, we'll be okay. This president does not get this, and that's why he's a wimp and not a leader.
He does need to get out there and sell this thing.
He needs to go
on every network available and sell this thing.
I agree, but I'll give you an example. Leading up to this, there were two press conferences. He did this impromptu press conference, which they ran, but they didn't run. The clips that they ran from it were minuscule and only pushed the meme that those particular pundits were pushing at that particular time. Secondly, CNN will run entire segments on how the president is losing the message, not messaging to his base, the left doesn't understand the real value of the bill, blah, blah, and then not further the conversation with any facts.
Right.
It drives me nuts. And when you have somebody saying the president's a wimp because he blah, 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 and then doesn't realize what you've actually gained from this because you're only listening to the top, you're only reading headlines and not reading any kind of details, and then you're bothering to write a letter like that, is maddening. No wonder he doesn't trust you. I'll tell you what, the Republicans.
I got a lot of hate mail for Jim, which is good because. No. Just basically, but I do get their point. Stop lionizing Truman and LBJ. They had huge majorities, as you pointed out, he's never had a majority, technically. And I do blame Democrats for some of this. I blame some of these conservadems. They
Mary
have also,
Landrieu, HuffPo is running a big – their main article on the tax compromise is morally bankrupt or morally corrupt. And the article is quoting Mary Landrieu. Mary Landrieu, who a month ago was holding up benefits to people in the Gulf – to guarantee oil companies didn't have to have more environmental safeties. And now she's the moral voice on what Obama's doing.
Anyway, Paul is saying the same thing. Steph, Truman and Johnson didn't have Limbaugh, Fox, the Internet, and they had huge majorities. Huge difference. Thank you, Paula. Okay. Okay. Anthony writes, all fine Americans, we allow every opinion on this show. There you are. Steph, I am glad President Obama is thinking about the American families who are suffering and need their unemployment. I'm tired of all the people in the cheap seats complaining and Monday morning quarterbacking. President Obama is dealing with prejudiced congressmen, power-hungry, backstabbing politicians who care nothing about their except their careers, spineless Democrats and progressives who whine and complain because he'll not give Republicans the finger. Also, he has a media who's interested in ratings instead of professional journalism. Tell me what his foes, critics, and whiners have done to move America forward, ease the suffering of the unemployed, and keep this country safe, if you ask me. We all ought to be saying thank you, Mr. President. Anthony, all right.
So, by the way, for those of you who don't know, beyond the extension of unemployment benefits, which seems to be the only thing people are aware of on this, there's a child tax credit that was extended.
Yeah.
College tuition tax credits, unemployment insurance extension, business investment tax breaks, which allows businesses to expense 100% of their capital investments in 1 year, mm-hmm. which is the whole – right now, American corporations are sitting on $2 trillion worth of wealth they're not spending.
Yeah, yeah.
And this gives them this zeroes out their excuses. There is no reason. Every job you add, every piece of equipment you buy is now 100%. You can expense it on your tax, and that has an incredible stimulative effect. So, and that was a broad based supported thing. But there's nobody's hearing about any of that stuff. It's nutty to me that.
The president. Right.
This is the public option debate all over again.
Yep.
I thought this was a strong position for us to take into the election, to crystallize the positions of the two parties, because I think the Democrats have better ideas.
Hallie, you and I, public option people.
Right.
That's the thing, is I don't think it's necessarily wrong for Democrats to fight. I think it's fine for progressives to push the president or to, advocate mm-hmm. for what we want. I mean, maybe they will get, so the Democrats will get some more good things in here before this passes. But what I hope we don't do is screw this up.
Is give up
let normal people suffer and maybe run out the clock so don't ask, don't tell doesn't pass.
Right.
Maybe the START treaty. It's like, I guess none of this will matter if we get annihilated by a nuke. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It just...
Well, that's the element of it. Is that there's no element of practicality at all right now, especially in the messaging of it. And if you're going to look at the benefits you're actually getting versus what you're being told you're getting, then you advocate sort of your responsibility. If you don't want to pay attention to the details of it, you abdicate your responsibility or your voice, I think, in it.
Right.
If you're going to complain about something, know what you're complaining about.
I'm just saying, you and I understand the president's the previous comments about whether it's the professional left or, sanctimonious purists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but I think that there is, like you say, there is some ground in there before, and that's what Lawrence O'Donnell was talking about, someone that's actually been in government, that's
right.
been in the room, that's been trying to get this stuff done for real people.
Yep. Well, that's ultimately, and that's really what occurred here. Again, you had Republicans blocked a 3-month extension of unemployment benefits and blocked an extension of the Bush tax cuts just for the middle class, not allowing it to get forward, even with the Democrat control of the House right now. There's no way after the first of the year that these two things would have gotten through on their own, or that a new bill that singled those things out without an addition.
Yeah,
would have
we
gotten
keep.
Through.
By the way, you can stop sending me angry letters about the filibuster. We can't use it. It was already used to pass health care.
Reconciliation.
So
yeah.
People keep, I can.
The other thing too is that the filibuster talk, because even Bill Press had somebody talking about getting rid of the filibuster. There is no practical filibuster right now. What really happens when somebody threatens a filibuster? Let me be very clear about this in the procedural aspect, because people seem to be very confused on this. What people do is they threaten a filibuster, but they don't actually filibuster. What they really are threatening is endless amendments.
Yep.
They can file thousands of amendments that just say, on paragraph 9, I want the word "and" to be cut to "but," and it'll kill the bill.
Yeah. Yep. All right, we got a break. 19 minutes after the hour, lots more to get to. We're going to check in with John Fugelsang in New York, and we have Representative Robert Andrews coming up right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
My opinion is, you're nuts.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Why don't I have half-naked boy toy dancers doing the Vogue hands for me? Why must I do it myself? Why must I do everything myself in this operation? There you are on HellSparks.com. There I am on the video stream. Okay.
It's true. Doing it very well, I might imagine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Why, thank you.
It's like almost like you know where your face begins and ends.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Which is hard with this much Chardonnay in me. 26 minutes after the hour, we go live now to our friend John Fugelsang in New York City, covering a very important event for us at the Liz Claiborne headquarters. Good morning, John Fugelsang.
Good morning, Steph and Hallie. Los Mooks, it's a pleasure to be with you. And I'm coming to you today along with the guy who's trying to kill you to get the insurance money, Steph.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, today he's brought me here to It's Time to Talk Day, which is sponsored by Liz Claiborne. And It's Time to Talk Day is a day dedicated to ensuring that Americans speak up about domestic violence, whether it be domestic violence, teen dating violence, intimate partner abuse. It's a national health crisis. And, you know, on a day when we're talking about how the Republican Party is doing to our economy what these men are doing to women and children, it's only fitting to raise awareness. And so I'm sitting here on behalf of your show trying to keep the fart jokes to a minimum for
Thank
the sake
you.
Of...
Thank you. Listen,
of,
I... It's not... it's not like we're all lowbrow. I have, Chris, you can confirm this. I once auctioned my bronzed butt off for charity, and it benefited a domestic violence shelter.
Really?
Yes.
How much did your butt fetch?
Well, you know, I think it was a hefty price. It's in some man's basement here in Los Angeles.
Really?
Who bought it? Yes, it's so some guy has got a piece of my ass here in Los Angeles.
Well,
at least that's one. And
really,
the money
hasn't?
Went to
yeah.
a benefit. Yes. Because it is. It's a very, very important issue. I've often said, John, that I wish that, you know, ultimately everybody, you know, at least women, when I speak as a woman, had the kind of upbringing that, you know, and the self-esteem that if a man hits you once, or a woman, anybody, mm-hmm. you're out the door.
Or
you know?
A child, yeah.
yeah.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I like to remind people of, it's never been harder for an abuser, be it through physical abuse or sexual abuse, it's never been tougher for a creep to get away with it than it is today. Because of events like this and because of, you know, people doing the Lord's work like, well, us, you know, it's never been harder for someone to get away with it.
Right.
Awareness is so high. Children, women know that they have other places to go.
That's
and,
right.
And so it's, you know, it's something I was really proud of. When you can look at Chris Brown doing zero jail time and getting a Grammy nomination, it just kind of seems like our national priorities may be a bit mixed up, because I think Chris Brown deserves to be passed around a cell block like a blunt at the Source Awards. So,
John Fugelsang, we're going to check in with you more this morning, but give me your take on the tax thing. We've got about a minute.
You know, I'm really
break.
Thrilled to see that President Obama has finally matured and grown up from a tax and spend Democrat to being a borrow and spend Republican. The thing about this is a
oh
bunch
boy.
Of people keeping
See, I'm
going
to need you to blunt the John Fugelsang
well, today. No, hang on. Listen, I totally understand every point Obama made, and I respect every point he made, okay? But the fact is, this is a lot of people keeping their jobs. Obama may think he's thrown the left under the bus to get re-election, and that may be true, and that may help, and it may be for the greater good in the long term. I think good things and bad things will come from this. You know, it's not a black and white issue.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Republicans, I think that they've given the strongest ammo ever, that they can never claim to be conservative again. They don't give a rat's ass about the deficit. And I hope China enjoys owning us even more.
They ballooned the deficit for one particular cause, and that's the only thing they get to carry away from this is the fact that they've ballooned the deficit, if it extends for 10 years, $900 billion.
Yeah, and you made a good point. How is the Tea Party on that? I want to know.
Yeah, how's the Tea Party on the extension for the rich?
They'll do as they're told.
29 minutes after the hour, right back with Representative Robert Andrews next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
What about my part? What about the Christmas Queen, Are you going to let all this beauty go to waste?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour.
I think it's tempting not to negotiate with hostage takers, unless the hostage gets harmed. Then people will question the wisdom of that strategy.
Representative Robert Andrews of the great state of New Jersey joins us now. Good morning, Congressman.
Stephanie, how are you?
I'm good. Boy, do we have us some discontent on our hands. I know the president met yesterday, somebody met, right? The White House met with Democratic leaders in the House, correct?
Yes.
And what is your take thus far on what's going to happen and how you're feeling about it?
Well, you know, I'm not pleased that we can't pass what we should do, which is a tax cut for the middle class, and that's it.
Yep.
I mean, that's the right policy. The House voted on that last week. About 85%, 90% of House Democrats voted for that. I did.
Listen, I'm a fan of everything the House has done.
Yeah,
the
well,
Senate is always the problem.
Well, I'll tell you. And then, you know, the same thing got on the Senate floor, and we got 53 votes. So let's talk about where this discontent should be first directed.
Right.
There are 59 Democrats in the Senate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Six of them.
I know.
You know, more that could not see themselves clear to support this pretty fundamental position of the
Congressman,
party.
I said this already today. You're yeah. dead on. You're dead on. That, you know, I understand we're all angry, and this to me, this is a huge pill
yeah.
to swallow, a tax cut for the top 2% that's going to add billions to the deficit. But this yeah. is what I was saying, is that, you know, it seemed to me the most disappointing was the Chuck Schumer's vote, right? It showed Republicans for exactly who they are. They wouldn't up to $1 million, they wouldn't vote for that.
Yeah, I think that was even more disappointing, but that's why we are where we are, and here's where I think we are. If we don't act by the 31st of December, every one of your listeners who pays income taxes, which is probably every one of your listeners, gets a tax increase.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Republicans say all the time, which is, oh, Democrats are going to raise your taxes, which is never true
yep.
for 98% of the American public, will become true on January 1st. We just can't let that happen for a lot of substantive and political reasons. So, look, I think we have to support this. And I know people don't like it, but I think we have to support it for that reason politically and for the reason, let me say, governmentally.
Sorry.
There is no way that we get a better deal after January 1st.
I just said that, too. Yep. Representative, you're you know, saying exactly what we've been thinking so far, and I'm glad to hear you sort of confirm it. But, you know, as you know, there is a lot of discontent out there in the progressive base that are listening right now.
Yep.
When we bring up the Schumer vote, the one thing, and again, you know, I know like Monday morning quarterbacking is of limited value.
Mm.
But, for instance, I think somebody said, what if the president had gotten behind Schumer's thing rather than making this deal with Republicans? I mean, is there discontent along those lines? Do you feel like this should have been handled differently?
I think that the six that we didn't get in the Senate are who they are, and you know their names
yeah.
and the way they approach this stuff. And I think the president spent a lot of his political capital, lest we forget, on health care to get those people aboard. I'm glad he did. He spent his political capital on the Wall Street reform to get those people aboard, and I'm glad he did. But, you know, it's a little frustrating that the 90% of us have to negotiate with the other 10 all the time. And he, look, the president's in the 90% camp. He wanted to sign a tax reduction only for the middle class. He won in the House. He didn't win in the Senate. He was 7 votes short.
Yeah.
So here's what's frustrating about this. If he had 58 or 59, you can go get a couple of Republicans and get this done. And I'll tell you how you do it. Olympia Snow, in my opinion, has already decided mm-hmm. to run as an independent.
Right.
That, you know,
right.
you have a better chance of winning the main Republican primary than she does.
Ooh.
With all
I like my chances.
You
all
should
right.
enter. You should enter. We should have a draft, Stephanie. But, I mean, I think she's probably already made that bridge,
yep.
or crossed that bridge, rather.
Yeah.
She could be number 60. You know, Susan Collins very often goes where Olympia goes. She could be 61. Voinovich is on his way out the door. He doesn't have to care anymore. And there's,
right.
you know, there's always ways. That, but the
legacy
president
votes.
Can't go get 7 votes. He could go 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
If you're looking at, you know, the villains of this piece, it's these Democratic senators who don't want to be Democrats.
Thank you. No, that's exactly what I said. You know, this has been the frustrating thing. You know, we keep, you know, talking about the Truman and, you know, LBJ analogies, and like they had huge majorities that were actual majorities, you know, not what this president has been dealing with.
And the irony about Mary Landrieu coming out against this compromise and then being one of the people who wouldn't side with cloture on getting those other votes through. So
yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's
you
absurd.
Know, this is the situation that Barack Obama and President Obama has to deal with every day.
Yeah.
And you know, he got the votes of whatever it was, 60 million people, but the votes of 6 are the problem.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Congressman. Congressman, yeah, the Congressman Andrews, the headline, of course, this morning, House Dems not persuaded by Obama on taxes. House Democratic leaders have not been persuaded by President Obama's arguments in favor of a tax deal. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says so far the response has not been good. Chris Van Hollen says he can't recommend the package to his colleagues.
Yeah.
Pelosi calls the estate tax provision a bridge too far. How is this going to play out in the House, do you think?
I don't know. Look, we're having the vice president come over this afternoon. He's the designated pinata for the day, I guess.
But, he's like, oh boy.
But, you know, people are gonna express their views and cast their votes. I think this will pass. I'm going to vote for it for the reasons I laid out for you here. I mean, I think we need to do this. And I think that's eventually where people will go. But let me make one other point here about Nancy Pelosi. It needs to be made. Her instinct, as usual, was right.
Yep.
She wanted to have this vote in the summertime.
And, well, the president made that point yesterday. I'm sorry.
Yep.
He said, I wanted this vote earlier. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
So did she. Yeah. And I will tell you firsthand, because I sat next to her and saw it. She wanted to have this vote because she correctly understood this was a great offensive weapon for us at that stage of the game. We should have run the fall election on this choice. We want to reduce taxes for the middle class. And then we don't want to borrow $700 billion from the Chinese, you know, so that Paris Hilton can get a tax reduction.
Right.
We
should have
run on that. And
yeah.
she wanted to, but we had nervous members that wanted to wait until after the election. They're now waiting on their resumes being, I mean, it didn't work for them anyway.
Right.
Yep.
So
yep.
we should have listened to her, and I think we wouldn't be in such a box today.
Congressman, I get a million different emails, and, you know, it's interesting from a lot of people that don't understand congressional rules and procedures.
Probably a lot of them are people from the Congress.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if you could answer them, because I understand the frustration. I mean, I was furious and sputtery, and then you calm that down probably like you have. And start thinking it through.
I never get calm, though. It's not in my job description.
Gary writes, Steph, use the veto pen. Mama, let the tax breaks expire. If the Republicans pass the tax break for the rich next year, Obama could veto it over and over again.
You know, I understand Gary's frustration, but let me tell you my perception of the reality of this. The Republicans have this false narrative going that Democrats raise money on raise taxes on middle class people and give the money away to wasteful spending. That's their whole rap.
Meaning
okay?
poor people.
It's totally false.
Right.
We cut taxes on 98% of the American people in the Recovery Act. The health care bill reduces health insurance premiums for middle class people and raises taxes by a little bit on the top 2% of that's the facts, okay? Now, if we do what your emailer suggests and the president lets December 31st come and go, there in fact will be a tax on bus drivers and real estate agents and teachers. Somebody making $30,000 a year would have a $1,500 tax increase if that happens. Can't let that happen, because that then gives truth to this Republican nonsense.
Yeah.
They would then make the following argument. The Democrats on their way out the door, as an act of spite, raise taxes on everyone, working
right.
people in the middle class, and then we Republicans came in 5 days later, reduced them again. That's what we don't want to have happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's exactly right. There are so many layers of this. I mean, the other thing that, and I don't know, like I say, what the chances are the Democrats are going to block this or Bernie Sanders is going to filibuster it, but what I don't
it's
want to,
happen.
Yeah. I mean, I hope not, because what I'm thinking is, you know, the other thing is we're going to fumble this, lose the politics of it, and not get to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know?
Exactly. And let me say that there were sort of three stages of failure here, that this vote should have taken place around Labor Day, and we should have had a 60-day argument about this question because the public is with us. The second failure would be, frankly, to not do it now. And then the third failure would be to have to backtrack and vote for something worse than this. You understand that this extension for the upper 5% or whatever it is two years. So we have a shot to fix this. I'm not saying we're going to, by the way, but we have a shot to fix it in 2 years. The Republicans want to make it permanent.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I feel pretty certain that after January 1st, that's what the House would do. And then we'd have only 52 Democrats in the Senate. God knows what would happen. They could conceivably get 60 votes to make it permanent over there.
Here's the other letter I get. Why can't the president just use executive order to extend unemployment benefits instead of using it to trade for this tax cut?
Because it would be unconstitutional. That his authority, he can use an executive order to implement a law that we have passed. But if we haven't passed a law that extends unemployment benefits beyond a certain date, he just can't do that.
Can he use executive order to overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell if the Congress does not do it in this session?
No, because there's a specific statute, sadly, from 1993 that created Don't Ask, Don't Tell. When Harry Truman used an executive order to integrate the military forces based on race, There was no law. The law was silent. So as commander-in-chief, he could execute that order. In this case, there's a statute passed by the Congress that the president could not contradict by executive order. So we need we need to pass a law to undo this the stupidity of don't ask, don't tell. Mm-hmm.
Carl Levin says we have the votes, and he thinks that we can do it. Are we going to do don't ask, don't tell?
No, I sure hope so. I mean, you know, the House passed this a long time ago. It should have been done a very long time ago, and this is an anachronism and an injustice that needs to go. I hope Senator Levin is right. I think, you know, Senator McCain's position on this has been absolutely preposterous.
Yeah.
And I hope that there are a couple of sensible Republicans in the Senate will support this because, you know, Barry Goldwater had it right. He said he didn't care if they were straight. He cares if they can shoot straight.
Yep.
And I think that's what Don't Ask, Don't Tell is really about.
Listen, my dad was Barry Goldwater's running mate, and I've been in an email war.
Right?
I've been in an
mm-hmm.
email war with my Republican brother over what my dad would have thought.
Your dad was Congressman Miller.
That's right.
I didn't know that.
You're kidding.
I didn't know that was your father.
Yeah. Yeah, but I, you know, Congressman, it's not like I'm the only person making the case that this is not my dad and Goldwater's party anymore. I just wrote this in this letter to my brother yesterday. I said, what do you think Dad would think about a party that just ran on the deficit, adding $900 billion to it, and trading it for a START treaty that Reagan would have thought was too conservative?
You know, your dad's Republican Party had a coherent, consistent philosophy that I would not have agreed with if I were there in that time, but
right.
It was coherent. But the present Republican Party is really about the accumulation of power for corporate America under whatever guise they need to use it for.
Right.
So in other words, if they need to be incoherent and add to the deficit to reduce taxes on the wealthy, they'll do it. If,
right.
if they need to be libertarian when it comes to, you know, gun ownership, but they want FBI agents in the bedrooms of teenage kids,
yeah.
that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a bizarre contradictory way of looking at the world. But
yeah.
You know, here's the good news. Here's the good news. They're now going to have to govern in the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're going to have to deal with these contradictions every single day.
Yep. That's
and I think what it's going to lay bare to the – look, I think the public falls in three camps. There's a third or so of the public that really likes the president, supports most of what he's doing. There's a third of the president who thinks he's the Antichrist. And then there's a third that, you know, is not happy with the direction of the country but want to see who's got the best ideas. That third – is going to see what the modern Republican Party is really about, and that's very good for us.
Yep, absolutely. Congressman, you make me all warm and fuzzy, and I've enjoyed this so much.
Well, I've enjoyed this a lot, too. Happy holiday to you. I like the little clip that was that Shirley Temple who led me into this segment?
Oh, I think it was actually Lucy from Charlie Brown, but
yes.
Close enough.
Well, next time I'm demanding Shirley Temple.
Okay, you got it.
All right.
Okay.
Congressman Robert
Happy
Andrews.
Holiday,
thank you.
You
too, sir.
Thanks.
There he goes.
Okay.
Another child star, animated, same thing.
For the record, knows completely how the mechanics of this base goes and basically reaffirmed everything that I've been saying for months.
Okay.
So
right.
I'd just like to give myself a high five.
Yes,
okay.
There we go.
High
this,
five, hooray.
This you moment brought to you by YouTube.
Secondly, that line
HowSparks.com.
I don't care if everybody's queer, I just care about how they can shoot, is actually from Dirty Harry originally.
Oh, Barry Goldwater's a thief. 48 minutes.
It is. It's from Dirty Harry.
48 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Your sidekicks,
mm-hmm.
They're awesome.
Yes.
Those guys probably could have careers in voiceovers in Hollywood.
However,
are a hack.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Engaged in a kiss. The sweat of your body covers me. Can you, my darling, can you picture this?
Okay, Hal, get it out of the way. Do it. Do your first.
I love his
52 minutes after the hour.
Five octave screams.
Yeah.
I wonder if he could do that.
Mariah Carey stole his act.
I just did it.
Yeah,
thank you. I get no credit. Just because I'm being funny doesn't mean it doesn't take skill.
Prince for Summer, I carry. He's like, that's my act.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Throat whistling.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
1-800-STEP-1 to the phone number. John in Chicago. Hey, John.
How are you doing today?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, I share everyone's frustration with this deal, but I think the president was right to lash back at people. It seems like, you know, I'm watching Keith, I'm watching Rachel, listening to Ed. You know, these insults are not about moving him. They're about just insulting him now.
It's
there's no acknowledgement. You know, if we had a list of progressives, if we looked to the list of Obama's accomplishments and shared them with progressive, even some of the MOOCs, the first thing we're going to hear is, yeah, but,
mm-hmm,
or that
mm-hmm.
was watered down,
yep.
or that took too long.
Yeah, John, I'm with Randy Rhodes on this. You know, it just kills me. I mean, look at Bush. It was one of the most, probably the most disastrous presidency
right.
in our history, and they marched in lockstep with him, you know, and voted for everything and stayed together. And, you know, in my opinion, the president, you know, John, did say yesterday, which is true, and I've said this, he has either done or tried to do everything he campaigned on.
Right.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. It's frustrating. You know, and like Robert Andrews says, it's the conservative Dems in some point mm-hmm. that have foiled him. And you're right. And some progressives that have done nothing but criticize him.
When he brought up the public option, that was painful for him. That was saying, look, I sold a lot of political capital to get this health care reform. But my people, progressives, and he is a progressive. I won't challenge anyone who says he isn't. He's mm-hmm. a pragmatic progressive. He's a progressive. My people will not acknowledge what I've done. They will not acknowledge, you know, what he had to
right.
go through to get health care reform passed. And, you know, I talked to you about this the other week, Steph. As progressives, I love the fact that we criticize, that we don't walk in lockstep. But you know what?
Oh, yeah.
90% of criticism we're putting out there is not productive. It's not constructive. It's meant to insult him, and it's not meant to move him. And we need to start giving criticism.
Well, we're letting the sort of Tea Party and Fox News kind of guys adapt the language to fit them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not even having a constructive conversation
yeah.
with our own representation. We're just getting into vitriol.
Yeah. You know what I always say, John? You got to know when to hold them, when to fold them, when to walk away
and
when
to run.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, watch. When don't ask, don't
tell. Everything passes. There is a season.
When don't ask, don't tell passes, we want to celebrate it, but I'm going to hear it took too long.
Right.
Like he should have done the second quarter. I'm not
going
to hear how great it was that it passed.
Nope.
I know I won't.
Yeah. Well, listen, John, I can say, you know, personally, when I came out, you know, small group percentage, but, you know, criticism from gays. Oh, it took so long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, nobody will ever come out if you know what I mean? I remember during the primaries, John, we talked about this. I mean, do you know how many, you know, again, talk radio is about opinions. Some of us had an opinion that Obama would be a better candidate. We had progressives threatening to boycott my sponsors, trying to get me thrown off stations. You know what I mean? That is not a product. And then I'm going, oh, great, just in time for the general election, the little tiny, tiny pool of progressive radio stations, you're going to try to hurt them to make a point. So all I'm saying is I understand the president's point sometimes about sanctimonious purity. It's like if you don't
right.
in some quarters, you're like, if you don't think what I think, then, you know, you're a stupid Obama apologist and screw you, and I'm not going to listen, and I'm not going to, you know, it's like, well.
Unfortunately, progressives are good at that.
Well, and the irony that the Republicans are holding the middle class and the poor hostage to get these tax cuts through, and that there are progressives who would hold the poor and the middle class hostage to not let those tax cuts go through, when the same damage is happening to the same people, no matter how you flop on that extreme position, is absurd.
Yeah. I thought, you know, it was interesting, Lawrence O'Donnell, and he had a lot of the same people on that are on, and I respect a lot of them, you know what I mean, and I obviously big fan of a lot of them, but I just thought that was a really interesting discussion because, you know, you had someone really that was on more of the pragmatic progressive side that was really kind of challenging them on a lot of points, and so I just thought it was a great discussion. Anyway, the president yesterday.
To my Democratic friends, what I'd suggest is, let's make sure that we understand this is a long game. This is not a short game.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he went on to say,
nobody on the progressive side argues with what the conservatives have managed to do with the Supreme Court over the last 30 years. And they're almost impressed by it. Everybody's going, this is so, you know, it's amazing what he's done. But if Obama tries to do it, he's letting his base down. It's
nuts. Argued some of his critics on the left would prefer to have the satisfaction of having a purist position and no victories for the American people. That can't be the measure of what it means to be a Democrat. Again, my buddy Randy Rhodes yesterday said, I will never be that kind of Democrat. And she took a lot of crap on her show yesterday from, you know, and that's okay. You know, we're allowed to disagree and we're allowed to, you know, I think in some ways, I can't remember who it was that wrote that, maybe Andrew Sullivan, but about progressive critics, they're doing their job. I mean, that's okay. to push for, you know, to try to push your president in the direction you want him to go. But anyway, all right.
Yeah, there's something to not barking him off a cliff either.
Yeah, not being an Australian shepherd.
Exactly.
Exactly. 58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Chris LaVoy. Voice deity, Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Of course, it is Wednesday, which means Hal Sparks is here.
Mm.
We are video streaming on HalSparks.com.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. Mm. Yes, you look very sexy.
As I smiled into the camera.
They think you. The chat room has convinced you flipped them off a moment ago. Did you flip them off?
Really?
I didn't see it. Yeah.
No.
Did you do that?
No, but I am now.
Oh, she did it again.
Right. I'm just
she
kidding.
She said something
okay.
in her eye.
Okay. Fine. Jim,
her finger,
you got some letters. Dear staff, please tell Jim to stop selectively lionizing Truman and LBJ. Remember that Truman almost blew his reelection bid and did end up leaving the presidency after his second term of the lowest approval ratings in decades. LBJ was so great as a president, he couldn't even run for reelection in 68.
Well, it's because of Vietnam.
I was genetically programmed to hate Lyndon Johnson anyway.
That was because of Vietnam. If it weren't for Vietnam, of course, he would have probably dropped dead in his second term anyway.
Truman and LBJ did many great things, don't get me wrong, but the notion that past Democratic presidents like Truman and LBJ would have done so much better against the most obstructionist GOP in modern history is speculation at best and self-serving at worst. Still fired up, still ready to go. David and Rebecca, you're still fired up, pal. Still ready to go.
I always forget Lenny Bruce's line about Lyndon B. Johnson. He goes, he didn't talk for the first 6 months. He had to practice saying Nagra.
Yeah, exactly.
So he wouldn't say the N-word.
He played grab ass with my mom once.
Really?
I just thought I should mention that.
He played grab ass with everybody.
Yeah, I know. Yes, my mom to dance. I think he played a little, he copped a feel off my mom.
Criminy.
Just saying. It's just a little historical fun fact. Okay, so a lot of fine Americans writing, and just want to give everybody a voice here. I got obviously tons and tons of emails, and I think I can dispense with most of the "you suck, please die, hate you, it's your fault, we had to compromise, thanks a lot, loser, turning you off, whatever." Thank you for those.
Yeah, they're the same people who went, "Say what you will about Bush, but he was consistent, he said what he meant."
He was great.
So did Hitler, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Patty.
How did he tell what he meant?
Did you just say that Hitler and Bush are the same person?
Yes.
All right. Just want to clarify.
No, Hitler was
I know.
Smarter.
People say that, but I'm just saying. Hitler said Poland had weapons of mass destruction. Just saying. Okay. So it's not totally historically inaccurate.
Plus, Dan.
Patty.
Grandfather supported the Nazis.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
Minor.
Prescott
yes.
Bush. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay. Patty in Old Town, Maine, says, "Steph, I'm as disappointed as you are. However, Obama's dealing with the hand he's dealt. He does not have an ideological majority to help him pass what he wanted. FDR did, Jim." A lot of side shots of Jim for some reason. "He has a slim majority, but as seen in the Saturday votes, they're not with him on ideology. So any political scientist will tell you the only option for enacting change is to be centrist and pragmatic. The two are not the same. LBJ had an ideological and in raw numbers majority." And she lifted a little fun fact. FDR, who presided over a classical realignment, had massive majorities for 6 years and enjoyed legislative success throughout his first term. Even Roosevelt, though, was rebuffed when he tried to pack the Supreme Court, lost his commanding majorities in the midterms of 1938. The second New Deal was legislated in 1935 and had no comparable. Domestic policy innovation was attempted for the rest of FDR's presidency. Obama was left with little choice when Democrats wouldn't even pass the tax cuts up to $1 million, period, which is what Congressman Andrews just told us last hour. He's willing to lose his base, who are ideological, in order to do the right thing. It might even cost him a second term, but he didn't want people to lose their unemployment benefits. He wanted the payroll tax, which will provide relief for middle-class working folks. I always say the right thing is usually the hard thing. Patty in Old Town, Maine.
Yep.
Yeah, it does seem to me that, in a way, Obama is taking Mike Malloy's advice in that he doesn't seem to care whether he gets a second term or not.
Right.
He wants to make sure he gets everything
he wants
can possibly
done.
Right.
get done during... doing his first
yeah
day.
Yeah, the president
86% of what he's campaigned on are already done.
This isn't an abstract debate. This is real money for real people. It will make a real difference in the lives of the folks who sent us here.
Oh, D, Plano, Texas, another fine American. Steph, while I'm in no way happy about the wealthiest Americans receiving an extended tax cut under the New Deal, I'm no way happy with some Democrats in Congress and some left-leading pundits who are trying to place the unappetizing meal all at the feet of President Obama. If we're honest with ourselves, a whole lot of people joined in cooking and preparing this culinary masterpiece. President Obama was just the one who had to bring it to the table. It's like the one who has to serve my cooking. I understand. For any Democrat in Congress who comes out guns blazing against this tax deal, I just hope they will be asked one question. Where were your guns when President Obama was urging Democrats to vote on the tax cuts before the midterm election,
yep,
when Democrats had more influence and much more to gain as a party? Again, the congressman just said that last hour. Hang on one sec. Seems like many of the same Democrats who are now trying to call out the president's manhood may want to check the front flap of their own pants. Finally,
hello.
I've heard a lot of people complaining about this compromise and calling it a bad deal, but I've yet to hear it from someone who's currently surviving on unemployment or living paycheck to paycheck to make ends meet.
Well, Obama is suffering from the general, I think, correct perception that Democrats have been kind of weak-kneed about
yes.
a lot of stuff.
I mean, well, this is what Congress
power
right.
that they had.
This is what Congressman Andrews just
and
said, and this is what I said yesterday. I'd lay this more at the feet of these friggin' conservadems. That
mm-hmm.
the, you know,
that's the downside of the 50-state strategy. So we got a lot of those.
Well, I mean, but Landry's been in there for a while, as has Ben Nelson. They've been around for a long time, these guys. And again, arguably, these people are Republicans from 1986. They're just now Democrats by comparison because the Republicans are now a crazy right-wing, nearly Saudi party.
For the opposition, Senator Frank Lautenberg, Democrat.
The price for the release of the hostages for a $100,000 tax cut for someone who makes a million here, too heavy a price.
Too heavy a price. Stupid poor people getting in the way.
One more. Raphael, getting sick and tired. Steph, been loyally listening to you, blah, blah, blah. Honestly, getting sick and tired of the naysayers on your show and the political blogs, for that matter.
Shut up.
Who do you mean, Raphael?
This is an argument. This is just contradiction.
Lately, I'm tuning.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Lately, I'm turning. Talk radio is the argument clinic, for God's sake.
Right, Jolly.
This is. I'm tuning out early because it's so upsetting to hear. People abandoned this president so early. Bill Clinton was way more centrist than Obama and has been, and yet we put him on a pedestal. We have a very unified Republican Party that has figured out what will weaken this president is to dishearten his base. Well, guess what? It's working. And it's working because it seems to me the loudest and angriest leftist voices are the only ones being heard.
Right.
That's true. I'm like a who in Whoville, frankly. I'm just a little, you know, peon. Well, I want to be loud now and say I still support this president, and I will decide if he deserves a second term when this term is up, not now. Can't wait for Hal. Phew. Oh, I know. Sometimes I'm like that, too. I'm like, where? Oh, my pinky.
I'll call in. Don't worry. Just if you really need me, just like a bat signal or something like that. We need some sort
of thing. Exactly. Can I get a Commissioner Gordon phone?
Yeah.
When you and Jim get a little too droopy. I need a hotline to Hal.
Here's the thing. You look at what Obama's trying to do with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and then you compare it to what Clinton did in the initial passing of it. Allowing that provision that ended up in the bill that keeps a president from being able to sign it away, which is in no other bill, almost, of its ilk, is an amazing concession that was made to the Republicans at that point. And a stunning one. An extrajudicial one, arguably.
Yeah. The president made a good point yesterday, I thought. He said that this country was founded on compromise. I couldn't go through the front door at this country's founding. You know, and this is...
Right.
I mean, and we've talked about this even in relation to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, for the Republicans to call it controversial, it's not controversial anymore.
Nope.
You know, but it has taken time, as any, you know, march towards civil rights has taken in this country.
And it should also give you an example of these are the people who have been involved in this fight for a long time, and they still think that way.
Mm-hmm.
They still think like it's 1965. Like it's
they're partying like it's 1965.
Right. A former Clinton aide said, there's no question he's made a pivot. He lives in a world profoundly different than he did before November 2nd. And that's true, and it's what Clinton dealt with, too. And
Well, in a way, the best thing we could have is the Republicans getting everything they want, because they're just going to start ripping themselves apart.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be too long before the teabaggers realize they've been had.
Well, I just said that. I'm like, how are they on adding $900 billion to the deficit? Didn't they just run on the deficit and on smaller government? I mean, all right. For the opposition, Jim, I guess the quote. As far as compromise, who said? As far as compromises go, what would Republicans give up? The word permanent? That's about it. And what would Democrats give up? One of the major planks of their platform. Oops. This doesn't even include a vote on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And it ain't even definite the Republicans are going to support the extension of unemployment because they're just mother... Who said that?
Tom Friedman.
No. I thought the vulgarity would be a tip-off. It's the Rude Pundit.
Oh,
of
course.
Our Monday friend. Not happy about the deal. Who said, sorry, dear sweet Obama supporters, but congressional Democrats should rebel. They should tell Joe Biden today it ain't going to happen, that Mitch McConnell can shove it up his... sorry. And the minority leader needs to explain to America why it's more important to give the wealthy several hundred billion dollars in tax relief rather than extend unemployment, which would cost less than 5 months of the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. Who said that?
Milton Friedman.
No. His rudeness, the pundit. All right, one last one. To be sure, Republicans bear almost the entire blame for this debacle. However, almost everyone on the left was telling the president that his approach to bipartisanship was going to bite him on the ass. Republicans acted like Republicans. Obama acted like his ass was made of titanium when it was just flesh, after all.
Jimmy Friedman.
No.
It's a guy I knew in high school.
His rudeness, the rude.
By the way, if you compare who benefits, there's a great thing on Think Progress, by the way, if you get a chance to look at it. Analysis. Obama's components of the tax deal help 150 million more people than the GOP's components would. Center for American Progress's Michael Linden and Michael Ettlinger know that various components of the tax deal outside of the Bush tax cuts will save or create about 2.2 million jobs. If you remove the GOP's priorities, it would create 2.7 million jobs.
Let's go through the fun facts. I have that in front of me because I think it is important. People understand what the framework is. In exchange for a two-year extension on all the tax cuts, a temporary extension, including those for households making more than $250,000 a year, the deal includes a 13-month extension of unemployment benefits, a 2% cut in the employee side of the payroll tax for 1 year, and retention of some of the expanded tax credit included in the stimulus and the Recovery Act.
Right.
To get Republicans on board, Obama also agreed to a two-year cut in the estate tax. Wonk Room, is what you were probably talking about, has a chart detailing both the number of people in millions who benefit from each side's priorities as well as the total cost in billions. Obama's components of the tax deal, extended unemployment, payroll, blah, 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 will cost $214 billion to aid 156 million people. The Republican priorities, extending the Bush tax cuts for the rich and cutting the estate tax, meanwhile, will cost $133 billion but only benefit roughly 4.8 million people.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get desperately needed help for the long-term unemployed and to provide the middle class with tax relief in a weak economy, Obama agreed to tax cuts for a small, wealthy portion of the population that the Republicans were willing to go to the mat for, even if it meant everyone's taxes went up if the Bush tax cuts expired. Blah, blah, blah. Excluded from this analysis, the extension of the broad-based Bush tax cuts, on which everybody agreed, the total package will cost about $900 billion over the next 2 years, entirely financed through deficit spending.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. There's your fiscal conservatives you just voted in.
Right.
But, you know, as the president made the point about health care, even, look, he and all of us were really disappointed about the public option. But he said, are you really saying that getting health care for 30 million people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and
you know,
protecting
he, even
it for
the public option,
million.
He talked about how many people that would affect. He's like, you're saying this is nothing? Something that Democrats have been trying to get done for 100 years,
right.
Which is a start, which we hope. I mean, that's the thing. If we would protect our quarterback, if we would give him majorities, if we would get off our ass in the midterms and vote,
right.
We could get the public option.
I love
we
when
could,
people like,
we could strengthen it over time.
I've been, you know what? Obama's not giving me what I wanted, and I've supported him by complaining a lot and not actually showing up at the polls.
Yeah. Like, 19, what? All right. 19. Now you got him missed. All right. I see you on the phones. We'll get to you 19 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
No need to thank us. It's what we do.
Who the hell are you guys?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
They killed the guy who wrote those lyrics.
I want a zigga zagga 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 zagga.
Guy? You're saying the Spice Girls didn't write their own songs?
It reminds me when I... reminds me when I...
Why?
Sorry.
Destroy my dream.
No, Spice Girls!
Okay.
Sorry, okay. I'm all right.
Reminds me when I write jokes when I'm drunk on a cocktail napkin. What did I mean by zigga zigga zagga zagga zagga? That he probably did. They wrote that when they were drunk. And
two guys walk into a flare.
Walk into a flare. 25 minutes after the hour, we go live now to our friend John Dougal saying in New York, covering a very important event for the Stephanie Miller newscast. Good morning,
Leave
John.
Leave the Spice Girls alone.
That's what I was saying to the songwriter as well.
Exactly. Well, I was great to see Posh Spice judging on American Idol last year because I don't know if you know this, but she was the fifth best singer in the history of the Spice Girls.
That's what I've heard. I've heard tell that.
She can lip sync with the best of them. Up there in Boyz II Men with lip
sync. Than she is.
Well, we're coming to you from It's Time to Talk Day, sponsored by Liz Claiborne here in New York City. And It's Time to Talk Day is a day dedicated to ensuring Americans speak up about domestic violence. Now, you guys might not know this, but in New York City alone last year, there were 250,349 domestic violence incidents. That's over 650 domestic violence incidents per day in New York City, and they can't all be pinned on Charlie Sheen.
No, come on. I think we could.
And those are the ones that are being reported.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're here surrounded by radio professionals everywhere, lots of good radio friends, and I see the back of Lionel's head over there, but who hasn't? And
hello.
I smelled some sulfur earlier, so I thought Glenn Beck might be coming in, but I was wrong. But this is all, radio stations coming together to raise awareness about this issue because it's never been harder for a creepy rat bastard to abuse someone than it is now because we talk about it as opposed to 50 years ago when you couldn't.
And up on StephanieMiller.com after the show, there will be some interviews that John has been doing throughout the morning if you want to know more about this issue, because it is, John, it's given people courage. I've never actually talked about this on the air, but I was the victim of domestic violence once, and I've got to say that to me is part of this issue, is to give women the self-esteem to just say, I will not put up with that. Because I think that's also, another element of that problem, and this problem that's not talked about.
And what's really not talked about is when men are victims of domestic violence, because that's virtually never reported.
Yeah.
Because it's so embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, right.
I know what you're talking about, Jim, but I've given you a safety word that time, so don't pin that on me. Well, it's true, and also a lot of people don't talk about domestic violence in gay couples, which is not uncommon. Yeah. And with children, and children have places to go. Children can go to teachers, go to guidance counselors. Adults often don't. We just talked to the head of HR for Verizon, who talked about how in many corporations, it's HR people who are leading the fight, and the private sector is actually bringing some social justice around by doing things to help employees who are victims of this.
Yeah.
So
it's
all good.
But, a lot of it, too, I think with women, it's empowering women economically, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of elements of it, of making people, you do not have to put up with this. We have to get to a zero tolerance place where it is never okay for someone to hit you. And
exactly
you don't
right.
ever have to put up with that. There's
right.
not,
and so many people stay in these relationships for years and years because of economic reasons. And very often, you're in a relationship. It's based on love and compassion and forgiveness. So if you're with someone who's, an alcoholic or bipolar or whatever the reasons they have for abusing you, you'll forgive the person. And normally it takes 8 attempts to leave before an abused victim finally leaves.
Oh, I'm a natural apologist, as I get called an Obama apologist every day. But I come by it honestly.
Yeah, well, if I wanted a Republican president,
you
I would have voted for Hillary.
No, but and it's not just violence. There are types of behavior that you don't have to put up with. The predicated, what I'm saying?
And you're exactly. And again,
And you can be a compassionate, empathetic person and still not have to deal with
distance.
That in your personal life. Yeah.
Right.
And not all violence is physical. It's not all battery. So there's emotional violence takes a huge toll as a public health issue, like the stuff you do to me on the air all the time, Steph. So, again, technically that's professional violence, not domestic. I know.
I know a guy that put up with this, and he said, well, I thought she was normal cake with crazy frosting, and then I found out she's crazy cake with crazy frosting.
By the way, when it happens to you, John, it's usually self-defense. I'm just saying.
This is true.
Yeah, the abuse that you get is usually warranted.
All right.
I know.
We'll check in with John again next hour. 29
we'll see you next hour.
29 minutes after the hour of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I was just decorating my Christmas tree. I was wondering, is there a trick to stringing cranberry sauce?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 34 minutes after the hour. Okay, this is kind of hilarious. I got an email from Mike Malloy.
Oh, nice.
Apparently,
Nice.
Yeah, apparently somebody is sending out lottery scams in my name. It says, apparently it's from Steph Mills, some kind of address like that. And Molloy says, okay, give me my money. Congratulations, your email has won you the sum of $500,000 from the computerized email selection of winners for online winners in this category. To file your claim, please contact Mr. Harry Johnson. Oh, come on, that's obviously
Mr.
a joke.
Mr. Harry Johnson.
Your reference number is blah, blah, blah. Congratulations once again, Stephanie Miller. That's apparently Mike Molloy, who now wants his money. Come get it, Molloy. All right, let's go to Sanchez in Montebello. Hola, ¿qué tal? Adios mío, mi amigo.
Support for the Mamacita y los Smokey show is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Okay.
And by Patron Reposado Tequila.
All right, let's just get to the chase this morning.
Back to the chase.
Don't you want to know about Mamacita y los Smokies on ice?
Yes, that's already coming. It's already the holiday season.
Right.
That's coming.
Well, good holiday to you anyway.
Yes.
I want to really, regarding this entire thing, I look at it as a bailout to the rich, but really, honestly, I want to appeal to all the conservatives that are listening in the audience. I mean, the real conservatives, not the Republicans or the neocons. I mean,
so all four of them, right?
Well, at least
no, a lot of conservatives listen.
There are a lot of lurking conservatives out there listening.
I don't mean listening. I mean, period, left over.
Okay. All right. Look, I want to ask you guys, because, I mean, there's an interesting story here. There are How much do you figure that we owe China at this very moment, as far as our deficit?
Is there a number big enough?
Yes, a lot. A kid number.
Well,
a gajillion billion.
Well, look, trillion. There's an interesting story that goes along with how this all came about. Remember a few weeks ago when that missile got fired off the coast of California,
yes.
Los Angeles?
Yeah.
On that very same day, President Hu Jintao of China was remarking and reminding President Obama that we owe the U.S. around $800 billion.
China. Yeah, which, why would you fire a missile at somebody who owes you money? That's like,
it's like, exactly.
I've loaned a runner a bunch of money and I'm threatening to break his legs if he doesn't pay me back.
Sorry, you didn't get us on that one. Barbara in Chicago. Hi, Barb.
Hey, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Basically, I have an idea as to how we can solve all the problems and go home and basically go ahead and give them the 2 years worth of tax cuts if we get Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the START Treaty, and the DREAM Act.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the thing, how it is hard to...
If they were tied together, I'd say you're absolutely right. But the problem is...
It is hard to know. Like, you know, everybody seems to know exactly what's going on behind closed doors and what the negotiation was. But, you know, I mean, I for one, will be furious if they don't ask, don't tell them.
You give us a tax cut, and we won't have you killed.
Right.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont.
This is a fight that I think we can win. We have received over 600 phone calls. I come from a small state. 99% of them are saying this is a bad agreement. You can do better.
Hal, you're guessing he will not filibuster.
He's not going to filibuster. Won't happen. He may try to sweeten it in committee. This is going to have to go through pretty quickly. This bill has to be structured and done because it's a deal right now. It's like a deal memo, but it has to actually be written and put through committee. There might be some sweetening that they try to do, but it's going to go through because they can't let all these tax cuts expire and they can't let the unemployment benefits expire.
Yep. We've been talking about this all morning, but it's interesting the way one news story is putting it. It's, you know, divided us into two factions. You know, you have the Jim McDermott, a leading progressive, saying this is the president's Gettysburg.
Good goal.
There is a presidential wing led by Obama that sees it is in his and his party's interest to strike a posture of reasonable accommodation on the theory it's both good policy and good politics to be seen as trying to get public business done, even in a season of divided government, which, you know, many people think that was the main message of the midterms. And then there's a congressional wing led by liberal lawmakers and cheered on by several prominent commentators who believe in confrontation on theories that Republicans will never bargain in good faith and that demoralized Democratic activists and the general public will both rally around leaders who draw clear lines and are willing to fight to defend them. So that is obviously the fight we're having right now. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I'm torn between two lovers, my future husband, Keith Olbermann, and my main hoa, Randy Rhodes. We're on completely opposite sides of this issue.
Oh, my God. This song's giving me a stomachache. Like, it literally is like...
And the B-side is I've Never Been to Me.
Yeah.
Obama defenders say he is simply responding to political and legal realities. If he does not strike a deal by the end of the year, rates will automatically rise for all taxpayers, potentially hurting the economy and putting Democrats at risk at being blamed for imposing higher taxes on the middle class, which, you know, if we've learned one thing, they're good at ramming a message through, even if it's not true. I think it's Sherrod Brown said, I think if it's clear that what we're doing what the country wants and saying yes to tax cuts for the middle class and extending unemployment, saying no to a tax bonus to millionaires and billionaires, and if we stay here until New Year's and continue to push for that, Republicans will realize they're on the wrong side of history.
Nope.
I disagree.
No,
they
won't. Happen.
They're always on the wrong side of history.
Well,
and they never,
they don't care. And they're willing to sacrifice everybody to do it.
Right.
They don't care.
No,
they
still think George Bush was a stunning success. The Iraq War, all of it. My Republican brother
for
thinks
them.
Reaganomics was the best thing ever.
What's their big selling point when they come into power is the idea that they're going to shut down government to shrink programs. So what makes you think that they would be more accommodating if you just kept talking over the next month? The only way they're going to do it is if they've got a concession for their corporate handlers. They give a crap about the people who voted for them.
Here's something that gave me a hope, and again, the other reason for doing this quickly, perhaps. One official who requested anonymity said the White House remains fully committed to the passage of the defense bill, including Don't Ask, Don't Tell, during the lame duck. This is a priority for the president. We're confident the Congress will be able to address that this year. I mean, that's the other thing, is not letting the Republicans run out the clock with this
right.
To be sure, not all progressives angry with the president. Some simply hope to provide ballast against the force of unified Republican minority on tax cuts and other issues. You can attack, like Keith Ellison, who we love,
yep.
Minnesota. He said you can attack the president to the point where you're going to get a Republican president, so just keep that in mind.
Yep.
This is not about the president. It's about what Republicans are demanding, and the focus needs to be on them, not on him.
Hmm. Well, we kind of do have a Republican president, but old school Republican. What used to be known as a moderate Republican, which...
Right.
Calculus is a liberal.
Today's socialist, according to the Tea Party, yeah. I mean, Senate. Here's the one part. I asked Congressman Andrews this earlier. Senate Democrats took particular umbrage at Obama's signaling a willingness to make a deal in the immediate aftermath of the midterms as Chuck Schumer and others were trying to sharpen their political attack by drawing an income line at mm-hmm. 1 million. I mean, the one thing that does trouble me, Hal, and you tell me, is that the John Boehner is on tape a month ago saying, well, of course, I'll vote for the, you know, tax cuts if I have to, even if it's only. And so.
Why didn't we take him up on that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, it's hard to,
We did in the House. It's the Senate that it
right,
won't
but
get
through. What I was saying is, what if the president had really gotten behind Chuck Schumer's proposal, for instance, instead of, you know, negotiating?
It's the messaging thing. We got to point this stuff out to people over and over and over again.
Right.
Because they didn't have the votes for it. Because Schumer's plan is great, but it's not actually going to land anywhere. I mean, you know, a lot of this is that's the issue, is that you don't even have the Democratic votes to get these things through, and then it all lands on Obama's shoulders. But when you're bottlenecking everything you try to do through six conservadems,
and that's what Congressman Andrews just said to us. I mean, in his opinion, that's where the problem is.
And you need all 60 votes or Republican Senator
and you know what? Republicans know
hole.
It. Because every pundit I see on TV goes, well, you guys have control of everything. Why don't you do what you must? Yeah,
right? Because they're lying. And the idea that a single senator could put an anonymous hold on you know, 80% of Obama's staff positions, judges, all that stuff, and then the same guy can have a hold and say endless amendments on one bill and kill it in its tracks. It'll never get up for a vote based on that.
Representative Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont.
My disappointment is that the president didn't hang in there and fight this and use the bully pulpit to win it.
What bully pulpit? He does a press conference, and then you never see the clips from it except for whatever people think will push their own meme.
House Democratic Caucus Chairman John Larson, Connecticut, indicated it would be very difficult to move the compromise through his chamber. He kept hope alive for changing the agreement, though, saying the House of Representatives always likes to make sure it puts its own imprimatur on everything we do. So like you said, maybe they're going to see about trying to get sweeteners. Chris Van Hollen, who we've had on many times, said that he has serious reservations about parts of the framework. Steny Hoyer says he shares Van Hollen's view. You know, Nancy Pelosi said we'll continue discussions with the president in our caucus in the days ahead. Leading Democrats in the Senate have not signed on to the agreement. Harry Reid said he will also discuss it with his caucus. Harry Reid.
No, I think we're going to have to do some more work on it.
Right. What, to make sure that Mary Landrieu can't scuttle it, basically?
Yeah. All right. And Mitch McLipless.
I think the vast majority of the members of the Republican Conference of the U.S. Senate feel that this is a step in the right direction, an important step to take for the American people.
All 4.8 million of them? All the Americans that count? The real Americans, the 4.8 million, million billionaires.
Gerald in Atlanta on the Conservative Dems. Hi, Gerald.
Hey, Steph. How are you?
Go ahead.
Hey, first of all, I hate you, Hal, because you took all my points. but I think that, you know, basically the real issue is the fact that, you know, we really need to, as a country, go back and take our eighth grade civics class all over again, because I don't think we really understand how government works and, you know, how we have the three separate bodies of government. And, you know, basically the two bodies of government right now are struggling, you know, to, you know, pass laws and do what needs to be done. I mean, the reality, what Democrats really need to be doing right now is working on, you know, campaign finance reform so that, you know, these
politicians... In 2012, we're not drowning in foreign money.
Well, these politicians are basically, you know, the issue is the fact that they think that this particular job, this public service job, is a job forever. It's a lifetime appointment. And so that's the reason why they don't do the things that the American people want.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, and, you know, we also have to say that the 50-state strategy at this point has failed. You know, while we have gotten a lot of out of it, but, you know, the people that we put in.
Well, it's time to, you're right. It's time to rethink things for sure. I mean, Jim just said that. It's the downside of the 50-state strategies.
Right.
We got these blue dogs that really, in my opinion, bone things up more than ever. You know, because we had the appearance of, oh, we're in control when we weren't. We really didn't.
And we also have a bunch of right-wingers on the Supreme Court who foisted, you know, the Citizens United. On
Again, a long-term strategy that the Republicans have had that we, like a frog in boiling water, we've woken up with these making corporations human beings.
Yeah.
And the conservatives over the years have known exactly that this is the plan, have towed the line even when they've had to hold their nose, even with Bush, who a lot of them think, you know, was a horrible conservative.
Right. 46 minutes after the hour, Hal will be explaining the frog analogy to me during the break. And then we'll be back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
What? the more you hear it, the funnier it gets.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Matron
Stephanie Miller.
Got a little motto, always sees me through. When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
That's Janice's favorite song to sing at karaoke.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah,
it is the Stephanie Miller Show.
Uh-oh.
51 minutes after the hour. They are a karaoke couple. Hal Sparks, stop making that face.
What is that from?
Chicago. Chicago.
Oh, God.
1-800-STEP-12, the phone number.
Take my favorite city and turn it into a musical. Shame on you. Shame on you.
The city
you.
Of fabulous shoulders.
Mark in Minneapolis. Hey, Mark.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm saying Feingold Grace in 2012.
All right. Down with it.
What I'd like to do is kind of play a game with you now.
But you know what? Let me bring up something, Mark. You know I'm a huge Russ Feingold fan, right?
Yeah.
Love him. But when the president was talking yesterday about, ideological, what do you call it, ideological purity and getting nothing done, Russ Feingold voted against the tax bill in the Senate.
Right.
And I get it. It's because he felt in this deficit we shouldn't add anything to the deficit. But again...
So he's got moral conviction.
Well, yeah, I'm not.
Look, there's
what I'm saying, Mark, is we could have gotten the Chuck Schumer bill up to a million if we had gotten people, even Democrats like Russ Feingold, to. So I'm just saying, there is a limit to ideological purity and then not getting anything done. Wouldn't that have been better than the deal we have now, the Chuck Schumer?
Why doesn't President Obama keep bringing a spitball gun to a gunfight? What he should have said, listen, if you're going to play these games with me, and if you're going to hold Americans hostage, and if you want to really have, you know, at these economic times, tax cuts for billionaires, we're going to investigate Bush and Cheney for war crimes, torture, and domestic surveillance. He could have said that behind the scenes. That's the gun he had to play. Now the Democrats look at...
Not to be a stickler, Mark, but there is no such thing as a spitball gun. You normally just use a straw or something. But anyway...
Those are two completely separate issues and would be seen as a complete diversion from this. And when you're really operating on the level that jobs are the most important thing and we're trying to fix the economy, it would be seen as a total distraction and almost madness if he brought it up in that way. I get what you're saying as far as the two of them being indicted. I'm for it, but yeah. I don't, as a practical
notion.
Well, the
fact that we have, you know, failed to do so says something about the rule of law. You know, you've got Bush running around selling his book.
There hasn't been, as much as the House has been doing great stuff, there hasn't been a single, like, major censure bill against the two of them that's been put through and gone through committee on its own. And the House has been a lot more open and progressive in pushing stuff through. So if it's not getting there, it's not getting to his desk. So I get what you're saying, but I don't feel like holding people who are unemployed and have been almost for the last 3 years straight hostage to get that point across. This point, I don't get why you hold that gun to that head of that person to get that point.
And the added thing about unemployment is the president said
unemployment
yesterday.
Insurance probably has the biggest impact in terms of making sure that the recovery that we have continues and perhaps at a faster pace.
The president,
single
of course, struggling.
Biggest stimulus effect. Right.
Yep, yesterday to prevent wholesale defections that could sink the tax deal. Hal says it's not going to happen.
Nope.
He chastised liberals for seeking ideological purity that could cause legislative logjams on vital issues. He did not spare Republicans either, though, likening them to hostage takers willing to hurt the great majority of Americans for the holy grail of extending tax cuts for millionaires.
The biggest threat of a filibuster is actually going to come from Jim DeMint. And that's because he doesn't want the unemployment benefits. Mm-hmm. And if he wants to try that and watch the GOP try to flail and keep him in line.
Yeah.
I think Jim DeMint has Retsin poisoning. It's got his brain.
With Retsin.
It's just a blue coloring.
I think he was trying to make the practical points. He said that without a compromise, 2 million unemployed people may not be able to pay their bills. Tens of millions of people who are struggling right now are suddenly going to lose their paycheck, smaller because of income tax increases. I'm not here to play games with the American people or the health of the economy. There were union guys on MSNBC not happy. AFL-CIO president said at large that tax cuts for the top 2% with an indefensible cut in the estate tax, giving away yet another bonus to the super rich. I know that's something Nancy Pelosi's not happy with. I would love it if they were able to get some sweeteners in
right
this,
now. But hardline Republicans are ready to stick it to the middle class and the poor to give a break to the rich, and hardline leftists and progressives are willing to stick it to the middle class and the poor to keep them from getting a tax cut. The victim is the same in both situations.
Mm-hmm.
And if those are the main people we're looking to benefit, the middle class and the poor, then nobody's going to enjoy the compromise, left or right, period.
Ray in Chicago. Hi, Ray. Welcome.
The one thing I think that's going under the radar here is this payroll deduction cut. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big wolf's in sheep's clothing because they've wanted to get rid of Social Security forever. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple points I have. One, this is a way to start starving it on the vine and disguise it as an economic stimulus. And second of all, people will get used to it being lower, and then they'll resent it going back up. And Republicans will be able to say that Obama and Democrats raised taxes in 2012 when it does go back up. And the other thing, it feeds their constant argument of it's your money. They always say that, and this feeds it. And people can become real short-sighted when they're hurting.
Except there's a shift in the like those kinds of taxes. Payroll taxes versus income taxes are perceived very differently by the vast majority of people because most people don't pay them specifically. They see it as their employer is paying that. Mm-hmm. And secondly, most Social Security is very popular, so a lot of people don't have as much of a problem. It's stimulative in that people can hire more people is the idea, and corporations are sitting on so much money pretending that they don't have the money to hire and to invest in new equipment and the like, that this eliminates that excuse.
Jay in Detroit. Hi, Jay.
Mama, I called yesterday. I still stick with we need nonviolent civil disobedience in the streets because these people need to have the fear of God put in them. But here's why I boiled down my anger to two core things. First off, this is kicking the can down to 2012 when he's going to try to run again. And with Citizens United, this is going to be a bloodbath. And the unemployment benefits are running out in 13 months. And
Without it, they run out now.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you know what? I'm not entirely, with as white as his hair has gotten, I'm not entirely sure he's going to run again. He might just say, screw it.
He's going to run again, and he's going to win. And because the benefits of these things is going to be more evident as we go along if everybody can just pay attention to the details.
All right, 58 minutes after the hour, Paul Katami plaintiff in the Prop 8 case, next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere, stephaniemiller.com. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Crystal Boy, voice deity, Jim Ward, and me, Stephanie Miller. We are video streaming on halsparks.com, it is the hump days with the Hal and all.
By the way, I saw a promising young comic by the name of Hal Sparks at the Flappers the other night in Burbank.
Flappers?
And it's a great club.
Awesome.
It's newish, right? Hal is great. He kicked ace. That's how you do it. If you want to see how you do stand up, watch Hal Sparks.
You got to see the whole penis sock puppet. You listen, it's a whole thing.
It is.
There's
totally
physical stuff you miss on the radio.
Chafing involved.
Exactly.
You can't miss.
All right. Keith in Palm Springs writes, dear Steph, thanks so much for having Elizabeth Edwards on the show. I shed a tear or two because I felt like I knew her a bit from your interview. Yeah, I was, you know, it's interesting. Chris, you said you actually shed a couple of tears too. Yeah. She just was, what can you say? Warm and funny. Yeah. And our listeners and friends down in Chapel Hill said she was like that in person. She used to just, you know, come down to the end of the driveway and hang out and talk to people. And it was just who you thought she was, you know.
Wow.
And that's a long-ass driveway, may I just say.
Yeah. Well, it's necessary in the country. You want to see people coming from a long way away.
Yes.
Who are you, stranger?
Anyway, but she
trick
was...
Trick or treat.
Right. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to shoot you.
You know, seriously, if you catch yourself whining, and we all do from time to time, think about what she went through in her life, you know. And,
John Edwards turns out not who we thought he was.
No. Exactly. She should. Well, people said it yesterday. She should have been the candidate.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Lots to get to. We are, Hal, I go to fancy things now that I'm a professional gay.
Yeah. I know. And you can cook now and everything. It's amazing how...
I get invited places.
It's amazing how coming out actually made you into the person we all knew you could be.
You became June Cleaver.
Yeah, exactly.
You're cooking.
I know. I don't know what's happened to
me. Recipes, social life.
I know.
You go to New York and have a good time.
I told
Chris
I wore a dress to the Trevor event.
What?
He's like, a dress? I'm like, I know.
You own one?
I'm even girlier now. Anyway,
Yummy.
I was at the American Foundation for Equality, gave a big benefit in New York a while back. I got to meet Ted Olson and all of the plaintiffs in. We had Chris Perry on yesterday of Perry versus Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
And the male plaintiffs live right here in Burbank and are going to be my two best gays, I can tell. Paul Katami is one of the plaintiffs, he and his lovely husband. Paul, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How come we're not best friends yet?
We're so on the way to being best friends.
Yeah, seriously.
I so bonded with you and your husband.
I know, we had a great time with you as well.
Well, we seriously will have to get together. Obviously, it just started Monday, pretty historic. It was televised and all of that. What was, it's interesting. We always talk to the experts and the lawyers and just wanted to know how you guys, you know, you're the people in this whose real lives are going to be affected. How did you feel?
Great, great day. We went into that day knowing that we had a case record that was based on the truth and that the district court had ruled in our favor based on that. And so we went in there feeling very confident that we could affirm that and just kind of sit behind the truth, knowing that we kind of went in with a winning hand. And so with that winning hand, we just knew that we had to affirm those things that were already in the record and make sure that we just kept telling the truth. And by telling the truth, we end up on the right side of history with this.
Mm-hmm. My producer here described the guy, the other lawyer, as stumbly. It's not a legal term, but a little stumbly.
But, well, to me, it's a legal term because I said the same thing.
He's just, but I think it's because their arguments are so stumbly. It's almost like they're turning into that John Lovitz character. You know, it's just like,
yeah. I mean, I think regardless of kind of like, you know, the effort to speak their side, I mean, it just goes to show that, again, with when you finally get to a court of law, you can't hide behind a slick ad campaign or a really forceful TV commercial. What you have to stand behind is the truth. And when you know when you're asked about a rational basis to prohibit people or a specific community from the rights that everyone else has in the country, you got to be stumbled because there isn't really any reason.
Right. Well, I mean, I love the one exchange where the judge actually said to the lawyer, "Well, that sounds like an argument to ban divorce."
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Because I say the same thing. I'm like, hey, if you're trying to protect marriage, then save marriage, but don't prohibit people who could actually fulfill the institution a bit better. Then, you know, so it's all about this prohibition versus really helping the people who are married stay married.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know if you saw, there was a great piece in the LA Times last weekend, but, you know, a guy that's done a lot of study on this, but, you know, was saying that he doesn't agree that it's a bad analogy to compare this to interracial marriage, because just stunningly, almost all the exact same arguments were made, about it, and proved to be completely false. And I didn't even realize that California was the first state to overturn, the ban on interracial marriage, and led to all across the country finally.
Right, and that's why I loved that kind of question from one of the justices that said, you know, so basically, if this is the will of the people, we could reinstate school segregation if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very poignant question because it's true. It's like, if, you know, listen, the law is there to protect us. And so sometimes it's fair to say, listen, we believe in the democratic process. We absolutely do. But the minute you go into a voting box and you pull a lever to take away someone else's rights is completely un-American.
You know, Chris Perry said on the show yesterday, Paul, that what she loved about it is that it really was so nonpartisan. When you get in a court of law, I mean, she said you really couldn't tell which judge was which. Because that's, I think, the case that Ted Olson and David Boies have made so eloquently is this is not partisan anymore. This is human, you know. I mean, and this is the, you know, when I came out, Paul, that's what I said. It's like, look, you know, Barry Goldwater has a, you know, gay grandson. You can look at Dick Cheney as a gay daughter. It really is not a partisan issue anymore, right? It's a human issue. It's about being able to look at your loved one and say, I love you, but I don't believe you deserve the same rights that I have.
Absolutely. And we get asked that question a lot. It's like, oh, well, this court might be conservative, or you might pull conservative justices in this court. And I say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, because it isn't. You're right. It's not a question. Even what it really boils down to is a question of equality. And it's a question of eradicating discrimination, because discrimination is really at the root of this.
Right.
People are using the word marriage to bandy about, but that's the benefit of what comes from this. What really is the issue is discrimination. And, mm-hmm. I say this all the time. I say, if you were to stop any American on any street corner across this nation and just blankly ask them, hey, do you believe that everyone deserves equal rights in this country? They're going to answer yes. If they answer no, you have a much bigger problem than just marriage equality,
yeah.
Right? So,
well, and that's what I agree with the people saying, stop calling it gay marriage. It's really true. It's marriage equality.
Exactly,
it really is.
Exactly,
yeah.
That. And that's my response. I'm like, it's not really about anything except for equality. I mean, there's over 1,000 federal rights we don't get,
right,
because we don't have that word. So if the word means the institution, well, then the word also, reflects the protections and the benefits of marriage that
exactly
are associated,
yep,
with it.
And it should not, you're absolutely right about the whole, it should not be partisan. That's the case that, you know, Ted Olson makes so beautifully. It is the conservative case for gay marriage. That is their whole, from my dad and Goldwater's time, Paul, it's been the whole thing is to keep the government out of our private lives.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Well,
I mean, that's why David Boies said on TV, he said, I think we could get all of the Supreme Court justices.
Exactly. And that's honestly their belief, because if they know the precedent, they know that there's 14 Supreme Court cases that precede this that, you know, reaffirm that marriage is a fundamental right. It is a birthright of Americans. It's not something that you can bandy about and take away from people. And it's funny because I've never, never, ever thought that I'd have so many friends call, email, text, Facebook me and say, we're in love with Ted Olson.
Yes,
right.
Listen, You and me both.
Yeah, well, he has really transformed our lives, I mean, in a major way. Both of them, David and Ted, have been so amazing. And it just goes to show, if your heart's in the right place and the law and history is on the right side, this is a non-issue.
That's
right.
Yeah. That's right. These people are, Paul, going to be on the wrong side of history. I mean, this is what offends me about they even had to do a study about, the military in terms of don't ask, don't tell. I mean, 7% of the military thought it should be integrated when they integrated the military.
Right.
It's like, and now there is, of course, majority support for overturning don't ask, don't tell in the general public and in the military. Now there's majority support, by the way, in California for gay marriage and in, and nationally. So,
right.
But the point is, we should not be putting minority rights to a majority vote.
Oh, absolutely not. And you think about that with DADT and, all these other issues, is that it's exactly that. It's not about who can spend the most money. It's not about who can provide the most, intense messaging, because we saw that in the campaign for Prop 8. I mean, everyone is saying there was this fair and balanced debate during 2008, but there really wasn't, especially if you're in the LGBT community. I mean, you're watching this going, I'm sorry, some of your messaging is not on par to create a balanced and fair conversation. You're saying things that harken back to the days of, true discrimination that was literally paid for and, and brought out in the public in terms of ad campaigns in the 70s, early 70s, and some sort of thing, protect your children. And I keep saying, protect your children from what? From the knowledge that, LGBT community exists and that they have loving relationships and families.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, are you really saying that you're trying to protect children from the knowledge that we exist? Because that's really the only case.
Well, yeah, my favorite listener was saying, he was concerned about having to tell his kids, and he finally said, honey, our next door neighbors, the cute, Kathy and Susan, remember, you're next door, and then she explained the whole thing to them, and the kids were like, okay, can we watch cartoons?
Exactly. I have nieces. We have nieces and nephews between us. Jeff and I have five nieces and nephews, or six nieces and nephews, and they're all age 13 and below, and it's funny because as they start to learn about this, and they all know about our case, they know Uncle Jeff and Uncle Paul for 10 years, and we tell them, and it's exactly that. They turn around, they go, can we play Wii now? What's up? And seriously, and I think about it, and I go, wow, it really is a generational issue, because to them, it is absolutely baffling. I mean, my 13-year-old niece is so well beyond her years in terms of this. I mean, she's texting me every time we're in court going, I don't get why you have to do this. I'm so proud of you guys, but I don't get why you have to fight for this.
Well, and to me, Paul, that's the most significant polling figure. If you look, I can't remember exactly the, younger demographic. I can't forget exactly the cutoff, but in every state, there is majority support, among the younger generation, and not in just blue state, not in just blue states, in every single state.
Right, and I think it's important to remember that that's fine. I mean, we always say, and this is a big thing that I say, it's like, we're not trying to push any agenda. I mean, that's become a really other big thing, is like, don't let the LGBT community push this agenda onto people. And I say, listen, everybody's got the right to believe what they want. We're not trying to change, the world or anyone's minds. What we're trying to say is we can live, harmoniously with people who totally disagree on many different things outside of this situation. But the problem is, you can't take a belief and you can't make a law out of it that prohibits people from having the rights that other people have. The minute you do that, you create a second class of citizenship. And in California, we have like three or four now.
Yeah.
And by doing so, it just totally goes against our Constitution and what this country's founded on. It really is a kind of a crazy idea to think that, we can create three or four classes of citizenship that way. So
yeah.
We say, believe what you want to believe, religious, moral, whatever it is, totally fine.
Right. Doesn't make sense legally, morally, constitutionally. And I see why they chose you and Jeff as the poster boys. You are smart and delightful. And we all are here in Burbank. I have a Will and Grace fantasy going on that we are going to be like a sitcom and spend all our time together.
You just said the magic word. That's got to happen. As long as Jeff can be Jack.
All right, Paul, best of luck. We'll talk again soon. Thanks so much, honey.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Of course, you guys.
All right.
Good morning.
All right, there he goes.
What this is really about is dudes feeling oogie about dudes getting with dudes. I have a constitutional right not to feel oogie.
I want you to pass a law to protect my feelings. because those guys are gay.
Chicks? Oh, that's fine. Yeah, we're fine.
What?
Yeah, girl and girl.
Oh, boy.
Dudes,
19 minutes.
Dudes.
19 minutes after the hour. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
What the hell was that?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
I can only rock and roll till 8 o'clock. Then I'm done.
24 minutes after the hour.
The early bird special. I'll rock for a little bit. Then.
How much can you rock in one afternoon? I mean, in all honesty.
1-800.
This one with the rocking.
Step 1-2, the phone number. John Bugle saying, piping in from New York, where he's covering a very important event for the Stephanie Miller Show.
Indeed, we are here for Liz Claiborne's 7th Annual It's Time to Talk Day, which ensures that Americans speak up about domestic violence, sort of like what the guy who wants to kill you for the insurance money does to you all the time.
Yes.
And it's great to be here, and it's great to be raising awareness. We've been talking with politicians and with activists and celebrities and everyone who's going around there, making sure, Stephanie, it's that much harder for abusive rat bastards to get away with it every year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. By the way, those interviews will be up on StephanieMiller.com that John's been doing throughout the morning. What celebrities have you seen? We're kind of shallow. We're out here in Hollywood.
Oh, well, what celebrities? Celebrities haven't I seen. We're in Times Square, so I can look out the window and see plenty. It's actually, I just finished talking to a very lovely celebrity.
What's her name?
Her name is, well, yeah. Let's start with Stephanie March from Law & Order.
Nice.
Yes, Law & Order SVU, who played the assistant DA, and she does a lot of activism work. And then,
sure.
Well, she's the most famous person I've spoken to so far, but there's a lot of very glamorous radio people here as well, like Lionel. I can smell his cologne from across the room.
Oh, it's not glamorous in radio.
Joy Brown's here, all hands. You know, I mean, it's like a who's who of radio riffraff in this
one
space.
We're bringing sexy back. Now,
everyone just wants to talk about Deal or No Deal starring President Obama. So
yes.
On everyone's mind here, too.
Yes. Give us more of your thoughts on that. We've been talking all morning with, Congress critters and various listeners. And, it does seem like, unfortunately, right for the moment, we have sort of split into two factions on the progressive side.
Not sort of. I mean, you can just watch MSNBC and see you've got two anchors for it and two anchors against it. And that gives the lie to people who claim MSNBC is the same as Fox. You never saw Bush getting attacked from the right.
John, I just thought that last night. I'm like, you would never see a special comment about George Bush from Fox News during the Bush years. Yeah.
I've said on your show before, MSNBC to me has more real conservatives than Fox ever had with Scarborough and Buchanan. Fox is neocons. Mm. They were all on the same page, and you never saw Bush getting attacks. And this is the good news and the bad news. The right is more organized. Mm. They're in lockstep, and it means it's a lot harder to get any actual progress.
I admire and am friends with many people on MSNBC. Obviously, I love Ed. I love Rachel. I love Keith. You know, and they have a right to their opinions, but so do Randy Rhodes and I.
Exactly. And look, I mean, here my view is very, very unpopular. I think that both sides are right on this. I think, it's a horrible sellout for Obama, and he's saving Christmas for millions of families in the country. You know, I on one level, I want to say this deal is so great, I'm going to let my grandkids pay for it. Again, where's the money, Lebowski? You know, it's like if you'd raise taxes on millionaires, you'd have the money for unemployment benefits. Instead, we're going to have to go to China with a cup in our hand.
No, I mean, it kills me. But I think the main thing is, since I've come out, John, I can admit that I'm really more in love with Randy Rhodes than I am Keith Olbermann. I think that's the important thing here.
You know, let's overturn NAFTA. I mean, if you want to save the money and bring the jobs back.
Right.
The biggest thing about this horrible deal, and I'm glad the president admits it's a horrible deal, is that, yes, it's going to save jobs here. It's going to help save Social Security benefits for now. But down the road, it's going to make the deficit that much greater. We have physical, tangible, empirical proof that Republicans don't give a rat's ass about the deficit. Not that most American citizens do either. But, they're going to use this to come back in 2 years and try and clobber Obama for raising taxes. They're going to use this to try and cut more money away from Social Security because we don't have the money to pay for it.
Yeah, but I think we could win the fight by now. They have right-wing asshats like Jeb Hensarling, Republican of Texas. Listen to
think that fundamentally that if we produce more unemployment checks, that somehow that leads to more employment is beyond counterintuitive. Frankly, it's a little loony in my humble opinion.
No one is saying that.
Exactly, you idiot.
It's
that people spend them, and it's stimulative to the economy.
Exactly. The money goes into the economy instead of just all being invested in Wall Street and yachts. Mm-hmm. So, the more or less...
Or offshore
the more
to Cayman Islands accounts.
Pay attention, idiot. That's not the part that creates jobs, It's the part that helps the people that are out of work in this economy,
Well, especially because our right-wing friends are so fond of saying freedom isn't free, but they only mean that when it involves killing people overseas.
Right.
Freedom isn't free. You want to enjoy America's freedoms? You want to prosper here? Well, then pay your admission price, bub.
Yeah.
And, again, this is not just a Republican problem. Democrats, deserve a large share of the blame for NAFTA. So more or less what we've learned from this whole compromise deal is the haves have bought off their politicians and the have-nots have not.
All right. John Fugel saying from New York, you can go to stephaniemiller.com for his interviews with a lot of domestic violence experts and celebrities, etc. It'll be
you
up
are
on stephaniemiller.com.
Sexy, sexy people. And, Steph, I would let you Ike Turner me anytime.
Thank you.
Wow.
That's the only Ike Turner joke I'm going to get away with the whole day.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Bye-bye now. 29 minutes after the hour.
Again, he earned that beating.
Back with Right Wing World and more on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
It's cute. Me too.
You guys have had far too much eggnog.
34 minutes after the hour. Mark in Atlanta, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you? Stephanie, I'm struggling to figure out, to put words to how I feel about the tax deal. And the best I've come up with is it makes me feel kind of like if you were to give your rich uncle a really nice, really expensive Rolex for Christmas, and he promises in return to quit choking your kid. I mean, that's how I feel.
Wow. Yeah, and then tell me, using that analogy, following that analogy to its natural thing, are you going to argue with me that the Rolex wouldn't be worth it?
Well,
honestly.
Here's the deal. He shouldn't be choking my kid to begin with.
We're not arguing that point. He's already doing it. That's the point. You know what I mean?
Well,
like
point,
you should that was that's sort of the argument about earlier in the year if we should have this debate around Labor Day. But
I get it. But my point is this: is unemployment insurance should not have been on the table to begin with. Okay.
But it expires naturally. It's not a permanent thing.
Mark, I have heard that argument from people that say, look, the Republicans have agreed to extensions of unemployment benefits in the past without holding, the tax cuts, getting tax cuts for the rich in the deal.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, how did they get coupled is what Mark
is
asking.
I'll tell you why, because they blocked both of those bills, and they're attached, and they both expire at the same time, essentially, and they need to be done before the new Congress comes
in. And this is why, Mark, the president said he wanted them to do this earlier, the tax, I put this on the feet of
I will soundly come down on the side of, if it takes a watch to get people to stop
this
choking
watch.
My child to death,
I will
part with the watch.
A comfortable hunk of metal.
Yeah, I carry this watch on my...
As Christopher Walken would say.
Years.
This is your birthright. I'll be damned.
I can't leave this behind.
Okay.
There's so much of that you can't say. Which
All right. Clinton, Wisconsin, another fine American writing, Dear Steph, thank you for arguing for the president this morning. I'm tired of the simplistic view they seem to be taking. The president can magically wave his hand and everything will work out. The American people will suddenly see the error of their ways and all will be well. It won't. And in the meantime, the unemployed will lose their house, go hungry. Many will unfortunately not survive. Mm-hmm. To simply say he should let them expire and the Republicans will own the tax hike is a recipe for disaster. All they'll do is wind up their media machine and Democrats will be at fault. To end off my rant, I have to take aim at these Kyles that want to primary Obama. If that happens, then I expect none of them to say a damn thing when President Palin is sworn in. But, of course, they will not realizing they're directly responsible for her election. Apparently, people have forgotten the lesson Nader taught us in Florida only 10 short years ago. We're all disappointed, but at least something is being done to help people. I guess that's no longer the top priority. Winning a fight is. Sigh.
All right. We'll stop choking her kids, but we'll start kicking the hell out of them. How about it?
But Wendy says, my head is about to explode. Thank you for being a reasonably sane progressive voice. I've about given up on my liberal brothers and sisters. What the hell did they expect Obama to do? He didn't have the votes for anything else. Not there. It's easy to say he should have let the unemployment benefits expire to prove a point when you're not the person whose benefits have expired. As someone who went through the whole bankruptcy, foreclosure, food stamps, unemployment thing during the last economic downturn, I can testify to the horror of not being able to feed your children or give them a Christmas. If you think that it's worth making millions of people suffer through that to prove a point, then F you. Your analysis is correct and humane. Obama did the best he could for the people. None of us like it, but the enemy is the Republicans, not Obama. So sick of liberals shooting themselves in the foot, I can hardly stand it. Wendy. One last one. Anthony, Steph, if you don't want the president to compromise and believe he should stand his ground, I'd suggest you and the other whiners. Now I'm a whiner, I guess. I keep getting thrown in both camps. to get enough, you and the other whiners get enough Democrats elected and the rules changed in the Senate to get everything passed without compromising. Also, while you and the others who sit in the cheap seats need to remember Americans were about to lose their unemployment, which would have meant more suffering, it's easy to play games when you're getting a paycheck. Thank you, Anthony.
By the way, this is just by the by.
Yes.
538.com has a post on the issue of liberal voter turnout. Turns out liberals didn't stay home. Their approval of Obama declined somewhat, but they still turned out to vote. In fact, they voted in higher percentages in some places. Mushy moderates sat at home on their independent asses from Chris and Yankton, of course. And crazy right-wing Republicans turned out in higher numbers because mm-hmm. they viewed the election as a proxy vote against Obama.
Mm-hmm. So. Let's go to Phil in San Jose. Hi, Phil. Welcome.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to make sure that the comment that Hal made earlier about this tax deal, when he mentioned the word corporate handlers, did not go by unnoticed. And I think that the biggest issue here is that the Republicans and Democrats have the same corporate handlers. In other words, this is the true definition of bipartisanship. Is we toe the line of the corporate line, but the difference between what Obama's doing and what the rest of the Democrats, Schumer and Pelosi, et cetera, is that he doesn't quite understand the politics and how to be deft about handling the message. So he gets kind of tripped up in this. But the real bottom line here is that we kind of get screwed every time by this corporate agenda. And so if we, recognize that, we just need to understand that we are the outsiders versus the insiders. It's not Republican, Democrat. It's not.
I disagree on one particular point. I think there are a difference between corporations. There are international, multinational corporations, and there are American corporations. There are giant multinationals and giant American corporations, and there are personal, like low level C corps that individuals have. So depending on which side you are, a middle class tax cut actually does affect a lot of corporations, but they are smaller, less than 500 employee, and in some cases less than 20 employees, which are a larger part of the economic base of this country. And there's a difference when you have Dems helping them and
right.
and GOP fighting for nothing but multinationals.
Yep. By the way, the president, I thought, made a couple of good points, because a lot of points on this have been brought up. A lot of people are saying, oh, this signals now the Republicans have the upper hand in all, they're saying, oh, you gave in to the bullies and now they have the upper hand. He said, I don't think so. This is a very unique circumstance, a situation in which tens of million people would be very directly damaged and deeply damaged. I'll be happy to see the Republicans test whether or not I'm itching for a fight on a whole range of issues. I suspect they will find that I am.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is not a situation in which I have failed to persuade the American people of the rightness of our position. I know the polls. The polls are on our side on this. I'm not arguing from a position of political weakness, which I think is true.
It's a matter of what you can get done and actually accomplish and what you're willing to sacrifice when you stand by your values. And if there's occasions where if you stand completely by your values, while you will feel good in your own pants, you will be starving other people. And that's not worth it.
And he's, by the way, Democrats did choose not to have this vote before the election. He said, I've said I would have liked to have seen a vote before the election. I thought this was a strong position to take in the election to crystallize the position of the two parties. So, a lot of this, and we've talked about it before, it's the spineless Democrats in some quarters, and not all of them, but, some of them, I think, tripped up the president as much as Republicans have.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was going to be interesting to see how the Republicans actually govern. Now that they have the House, to see what they can actually get passed.
Yeah, well,
I think they're going to have a hard time.
We put Andrew Sullivan's piece up, right, from the Daily Dish. But he has just an interesting take on it, and I think that's what he talks about, that he thinks this is very smart strategy. And even Alan Grayson said this is the first time they've come to the table on anything, because now they know they have to. They can't just be the hysterical party of no, and he's a Kenyan socialist. And I think what Andrew Sullivan is saying is every time they make a deal, they can't keep casting him as the other in some crazy – they make him look more sensible and moderate, speaking of the moderates that stayed home, one last fine American. Tammy, staff, can't we all just get along? I mean Democrats, not Democrats and Republicans. Are we Democrats gullible enough to continue to do the Republicans' dirty work? Why are we Democrats spending our precious time and resources bringing down President Obama and Democratic leaders? We need to stop giving the Democratic base their reasons and excuses for sitting out elections. The Republicans are being unreasonable, uncaring, harmful to the American people, and yet they're successful. At least in this election, they were. They have us Democrats fighting each other and doing their dirty work by bringing down President Obama. Democrats are not demanding the Republicans be held responsible for their votes and abuses of the system. Instead, many Democrats are sounding like whiny, spoiled little kids. I didn't get exactly what I want, so now I'm not going to be your friend. We need to stop highlighting what's wrong with the president and Democratic leaders. We need to start reminding the American people that what the Republicans stand for and why these horrible compromises had to be made. Stop painting the president as weak and incompetent. Let's talk about his accomplishments. Democrats seem to lose sight of just what President Obama has done for this country. I, for one, cannot afford to have my taxes go up to prove a point or so. So the president looks like a fighter. If our taxes were to go up, we would have no choice but to either drop our health care coverage for our family or possibly sell our home before it's taken away. Let's remember we are real people. Our lives are affected by decisions that are made good or bad in Washington. How about we all just take a deep breath, regroup, start focusing our attention on getting Democrats and President-elect Obama elected in 2012. It's time to highlight the Republicans obviously hate the middle class and their attempts to ruin the middle class and take away the American dream. Tammy,
and
thank you, Tammy.
I think you're going to find it a huge split within the Republican side,
yep.
And within the teabaggers themselves. So they're going to break off into various factions, I think.
They get to see who they actually voted for,
right.
What those people actually accomplished, and the Democrats do have we had to compromise with this element of it, but we did get a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. The child tax credit, the education tax credit, and the extension of unemployment benefits, and the middle class tax cut is still there.
And now that the Republicans
would
have taken the House, they have to produce. They have to.
Yep.
Start doing stuff, and I think they're going to find it difficult.
Rob in Santa Cruz. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Steph. How are you?
Good, honey. Go ahead.
The one thing that kind of bothered me about President Obama's speech yesterday was he says, we're not thinking in the long term, and he is on our behalf as progressives. And
well, you said it's a long game is what he's saying, you know.
Yeah, it's a long game. But I think the issue that I had with him on that was I think we've set ourselves up to now position the Republicans to really challenge Social Security and make great negative impact on it by diminishing it or privatizing it, because we've now increased the deficit. He's actually given us a 2% pay raise, if you will, at the expense of the Social Security system. And 2 years from now, the Republicans will continue to make the case that we're overburdened with deficit, and one of the prime targets they've had for decades is Social Security.
Well, but then that's when we make the case again that the thing bloating the deficit is the tax cuts for the
exactly,
rich.
Right.
I mean, that's – and, you know, you do make a good point, Rob. I mean, that's what kills me is you just – I cannot believe – that anybody can buy this argument from them, you know, when they're bloating the deficit by this much for something that has provably, demonstrably not created jobs, and still using that old meme that, oh, this, well, we need to give the rich the tax break so they'll create jobs. It's like, well, where are they for the last 8 years then? If your policies are so, you know, correct. 46 minutes after the hour, back with Right Wing World and more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I guess that makes our naughty parts tingle.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah!
Everybody dance now!
Stephanie Miller.
Party!
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Woot! 50 minutes after the hour, we are in...
So make it hot at this party.
Yes.
That's
dance
my point.
At this party. Figuratively.
John Nashville got his gay all over the military at one point. Hello, John.
What?
Yes, it's Josh.
Josh, sorry.
Yeah, I was in the military, and I'm a gay American, and I really never had any problems with people, but, you know, I really wish y'all would quit putting your nasty gay stuff over the air. Keep it in the closet.
Okay.
Because we don't like you people.
Okay.
And it'll never change.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye now. Thanks.
Wow.
We don't like these people, and it'll never change.
Is that a character? I think he was real.
It'll totally change when you're dead in 12 years from your poor health habits and your vitriolic inner dialogue that gives you cancer and your sort of hateful mentality that makes you nobody's there when you call when you have a heart attack because nobody wants to be around you. It'll end.
You know, a conversation starts with you people. There's just nowhere to go with that. Tim and
we don't like ye gay.
Tim and Madison.
Hi, I'm from Stereotypers Anonymous, and we're calling around with Southern accents to give everyone in the South a bad name.
Hi, Cracky. Hi, Tim.
Hey. Well, I don't like breeders. The only reason why I like them is so that way they keep making more gays. So I guess we have something in common.
I beg your pardon. As a gay adjacent breeder, I'll have you know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you're an exception. I like you.
Thank you.
Because you play the gay, so that's fine.
That's true.
And go ahead, Tim.
Amazingly well.
I think I found a picture of you actually at the Trevor Project event from a week like last week.
Oh no, and I looked like a stuffed sausage in that dress, didn't I?
No, you don't.
I looked like a couple of hogs fighting in a sack. Oh, I'm having such self-esteem issues.
You breasts do. I didn't know you ever had. I didn't know you had breasts until I seen you in that.
It was a really tight dress.
So you actually looked really good. I must say, you since you've come out of the closet, you can finally dress yourself respectfully.
You're such a bitch,
you,
Tim.
Stephanie. I know I am.
All right, goodbye.
Owie.
All right. I mentioned this earlier.
I'm scared here. I don't like
you.
Yes,
there you go
again. Hard.
Should keep it in the closet. I don't like it.
Women shouldn't work either.
Hmm.
I'm never going to like it.
In the
it.
Christmas season, no less, we can't play in his reindeer games. Well, fine.
My name's Blitzen.
From now on, gang, we won't let Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
I don't like anybody different. Especially if they have skills that are better than mine.
A top Democrat says Tuesday the U.S. Senate has time and the votes to lift Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Carl Levin said, I think we've got a good shot at 60 votes. He hopes that it'll be taken up this week still. If the Senate vote is pushed aside by other major legislation, which is what the Republicans are hoping for, it will be unlikely to pass, of course, next year when Republicans take control. Levin said, I think there are enough people who think we should abolish this discriminatory measure. I'm not sure the tax deal really changes the dynamics. It may have helped. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McLiplis said he doesn't see how we can possibly finish the defense bill fully aside from these controversial items in it. I don't know. Shut up, McLiplis. Seriously, it's not even. How is it controversial anymore? It's just, we couldn't possibly get to that. Mm-hmm. All right, let's dive into the right-wing world, see what's doing. Fred Barnes on the Brit Bear, trying to rile up the liberal base again.
The truth is, from a Democratic standpoint, if you're a liberal, if you're a hardcore, unrepentant liberal after this election,
unrepentant.
It was a bad deal, because even the stuff that, some of the things he claimed that he got, like the cut in the payroll tax, are things Republicans are happy to give him.
What does he think liberals have to be repentant about?
Yeah, exactly.
Against unnecessary war.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Helping the middle class and the poor.
Yeah.
Roads, bridges.
Well, you have to understand when he says left, he means dead Marxists.
Ah.
Like he really does. I mean, there's no. They don't actually think of us as thinking human beings.
All right, Rush Limbaugh on the
Everything presence. He's done has been an attack on the greatness of this country. Everything Obama has done.
Wow.
From his standpoint, it's been a success. Everything he's done, stimulus, TARP, General Motors Chrysler,
uh-huh.
oil drilling moratorium,
uh-huh.
health care,
uh-huh.
everything he's done has been assault on the traditions and institutions that defined the greatness of this country.
I think he almost choked on his own bile in the middle of that. Did you hear that?
He is right, because if you look through his perspective, because in his perspective, America is a country with a population of 100,000 Americans and a bunch of people who should be treating those Americans correctly because they're rich and they run everything. And
Glenn Beck on the only thing saving America now.
May I just ask, if it wasn't for talk radio and Fox News...
Mm-hmm.
Where would this country be today?
Oh, dear.
Probably have a public option.
You can answer that. Oh, it would be a lot better off if you're Bertha Lewis.
Who?
What?
Or you could say,
she run the Tides
doomed
Foundation.
To a Marxist hell.
Oh!
Marxist. If you were on my side.
No one is on your side, Glenn. No one. Not even you. If you listen to watch his tweets sometimes, yeah. That man hates himself more than I do most of the time.
By the way, Brian Kilmeade, as usual, with his finger on the pulse of the American people, worried about losing your job? No, your house, not the health insurance.
Dillweed.
No, the parade, the Christmas parade in Tulsa.
City leaders in Tulsa, Oklahoma, meet this morning to vote on a permit for their annual parade, a parade that's been the topic of national controversy. What? That's because the word Christmas has been removed from the title in favor of the word holiday. What? U.S. Senator Jim Inhofe says he's planning to boycott the parade and keeping his horse home.
Stupid Jews wanting to be out there with another holiday.
Jim DeMint is depriving the people of Tulsa his horse. Just
Inhofe. Yeah.
What?
Inhofe.
Never.
Yeah,
Inhofe.
Hannity and Dick Morris.
And joining me with reaction to this late-breaking deal, former Clinton advisor Dick Morris. Dick, good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean. You know, to characterize this as a deal is like that famous deal that Emperor Hirohito struck with MacArthur on the battleship Missouri. This is a surrender. This is absolutely Obama caving in.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. There's the talking point.
Yep.
And it is permeated everywhere. Even though it's a 2-year extension and it's not permanent, which was what they were going to try to push through. And he affects 158 million people.
Okay, Andrew Napolitano.
Does the government do this because they think it's compassionate, that is, extend unemployment payments, or do they do this because they think it will stimulate the economy? How does it stimulate the economy to pay people not to work? If I'm going to be out of work and I know that I'm going to be paid for 3 years by the federal government, what is my incentive to get a job?
$300 a week. People don't have self-respect or ethics.
Who wants that gravy train to end? Okay, that's it for us. I'd like to thank Jim Ward, Chris Lavoie, Miranda Moreno, and of course Hal Sparks, the lovely and talented HalSparks.com. Check it out. Mm-hmm. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.